Today's episode is brought to you by Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Klass as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Today's episode is brought to you by Visible. The future of wireless is here, and it's transparent. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees, no surprises, no, really.
What are you waiting for? Get with the times and switch to Visible at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan for data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
Welcome to Stuff from the Science Lab from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hey guys, and welcome to the podcast. This is Allison Lattermilk, the science editor at HowStuffWorks.com.
And this is Robert Lamb, science writer at HowStuffWorks.com. And this week we're talking about wine and, wine and science. So first of all, we need to stress that...
Kids, don't go drinking a glass of wine while you're listening to this podcast.
Yeah, don't let this inspire you because, trust me, you're not going to like what it tastes like anyway when you're old enough to drink it. So,
but you will later, yes.
Yeah, later. It's going to take a while, so don't rush it. So yeah, HowStuffWorks.com has a lot of really cool articles about how wine is made, about some of the possible health benefits of drinking like a glass of red wine a day, how to make your own wine, etc. But we're not really going to get into all that. If you want that, hit the site because we've got it.
We got you covered.
Yeah. What we're going to talk about are a few cases where science and wine sort of, you know, hang out together and conduct some really cool experiments and also in some cases some really interesting chance encounters between the world of science and the world of wine.
I had a friend who used to live in Atlanta who was a microbiologist, and he went out to California with his wife and wound up working as a microbiologist out there for one of the vineyards.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, there's a real chemistry to it. I don't know anybody that is like that heavy into the science of it, that specific area of the science of it. I have a friend who's a dietitian, and she, when she talks about wine, she definitely has a dietitian's stance on it. And then I have another friend who like took courses in like, you know, how wine is made in the different regions, and she's, you know, she advises people on, you know, which one to get and which, you know, to pair with which cheese, etc.
So do you think you have a good palate?
I like wine a lot, but I'm not like super, you know, I don't have this amazing palate. I'm not a super taster or anything.
No, I don't think I'm a super taster either. I think some of my in-laws might be super tasters. They seem to have amazing palates. They can discern all of these amazing tones and flavors and all sorts of things in wine that I can never detect.
Yeah, I tend to like choose bottles based on what kind of animal is on the label.
Like or what price tag they have.
Yeah,
perhaps.
Well, that also helps a lot. Yeah, but no, I like a good wine. But I'd tell you who else liked a good wine. Frédéric Brochet, cognitive neuroscientist at the University of Bordeaux in France.
What did he do?
Well, this is pretty awesome. He in 1998 he decided he was going to have some wine specialists he knew over for a tasting. 54 of them, in fact.
That's a lot of wine knowledge in one room.
Yeah, and Brochet himself is quite the wine enthusiast as well. So, you know, this guy invites you over and for a tasting, you're like, all right, you know, he knows his stuff, let's do it.
So what happened at this tasting?
Well, he decided that he was going to first give them a pair of wines, a red and a white, to taste.
Okay.
Which they did, and they all made their notes on the wine, and everybody.
I wonder if you provided them with spittoons.
Probably, yeah. They're all about you spit it out, and then you cleanse your palate and all that, and you know, swish around some water, and then you describe it in all of this rather elegant language, which I imagine a number of people have heard before. We have a whole list of these that came from the study that Brochet later published. But I mean, I love how there are things like you talk about the like raspberry tones, and you talk about, you know, distinct lemon, honey, straw, floral tastes in the wine.
And those would be whites primarily.
Yeah.
And then you get into the reds, and I heard one person describe it as leather.
Leather.
I thought that was fairly interesting. And then they're, you know, plump, final, dark, intense, deep, and all those sorts of things.
My wife has a theory that the more advanced the wine connoisseur or wine snob, if you want to be judgmental, the more advanced your knowledge of wine, the crazier and kind of disgusting your terminology will be for even a good wine. So you might be like, I detect a hint of dog, some light tachyon notes. You know, it'll be stuff that, like, what does that even mean? Tachyon, that's a subatomic particle. How does a wine taste like that? But yeah, so everybody knows the kind of language we're talking about. So they tasted the red and the white, and they made all these complicated, you know, descriptions. And, you know, and some of the adjectives are very much white wine describers, and others are red wine describers.
Okay.
Okay. So, you know, everybody, ha ha ha, tries the wine, comments on it, puts down their notes. Then he brings out a second pair of wine. Again, a red and a white. Everybody does the same thing. You know, they taste them, they put down their comments on it. And they make their notes, you know, in white language for the white wine, red language for the red wine.
Okay.
But then the big reveal. The second couple of wines are both the same white wine. He just put red food coloring, flavorless red food coloring, into one of the whites.
No kidding.
Yeah. And the thing is, nobody figured it out. Like, nobody, not a single person, and these are all specialists. Not a single one said, hey, I think these are the same, this is the same wine, and you just put food coloring in one of them. Like, no one even said, hey, these are very similar. They used the distinct language to describe the red and the white.
Okay.
All right. So,
Brochet wasn't done.
That's right. He threw another wine party.
He must have had to invite a whole different set of specialists. I can't imagine the same set of specialists would come back after the big reveal.
It seems, or if they would, they would be very suspicious. Like, all right, what's this wine? What'd you do? Is this soda water?
A flawed experiment.
Yeah. Which, actually, he kind of did something similar to that. Because what he did is he told everybody beforehand that he was going to serve a common table wine and a premium vintage.
Okay.
All right. Something fancy, you know? So he starts off, he makes a show of tasting each of them, and he responds in a predictable manner. You know, he tastes the table wine, and he's like, oh, you know, this table wine, all right, this, you know, pretty good, spits it out. And then he tastes the vintage, and he sort of waxes poetic about how nice.
The premium vintage, right?
Yeah, the premium vintage. So, and then everybody else tries it as well. And of course they do the same thing, you know. Okay, you know, this is, you know, the premium vintage is this and that, and the table wine is, oh, you know, it's all right, it's table wine, it's pretty good, but there's no comparison, except they're the same common, like, Bordeaux wine.
Oh no, yeah, Brochet did it again.
There is no premium vintage. It's just a very basic wine.
And again, no one picked up on it.
No one picked up on it. Yeah.
So what's the lesson here? It seems that taste is more than what's on your tongue. It's a combination of all the senses.
Yeah.
Especially what you're seeing and what you're perceiving.
Mm-hmm.
Is that what Brochet was trying to get at?
Yeah. And, you know, he's not just being a jerk, you know, because he's very adamant in the paper that he likes wine, and that this is actually to the benefit of people who are into tasting wine and talking about it. But yeah, it's like we don't just taste, a glass of Pinot Grigio. You know, we're looking at it. We're smelling it. And we're bringing in all these preconceptions based on what someone just told us about it, what the label looks like,
mm-hmm.
You know, how much you paid for it. You know, all these different things end up affecting our, experience with the wine.
Didn't Berchet also predict that the more honed a palate the wine specialists had, the more likely they were to fall for this trick, the red dye trick at least?
Yeah, the more into wine you are and the more of a specialist you are, the more likely you are to fall for the red dye and the white wine experiment.
So this made me think of, have you ever heard of bartenders using like top shelf liquors, or at least the bottles of top shelf liquors, and filling them with the cheap stuff and then serving them to people?
Yeah. I've heard about that. Yeah.
I don't know if I would pick up the difference. Do you think you would?
Probably not.
You know, say if somebody was giving you Papa versus Kettle One vodka, do you think you would pick up on it?
Probably not. For one thing, if you're having like in a pina colada or something, I mean, it's what you're probably not going to notice.
But what about something like a martini or a gimlet?
Yeah, I could see. I don't know if I would, because I don't have mixed drinks that often, mm-hmm. but I can definitely see where somebody would, especially if it was like, say, a sipping like vodka or a sipping tequila or something.
Right. I think it would be harder in that if it were served neat as opposed to with ice.
Yeah. Now, if it was like Irish car bombs, I doubt anybody's going to notice. But that actually brings up another point. There's a friend of mine who's a graphic design person, and she has this theory that you could make money selling like fake fancy labels that slide over your bottles of $2 Chuck.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And so you can just, you know, you go to the store, you spend $2 on a bottle of wine, but then you put the fancy label on it and everybody's cool with it.
Or you bring it as a gift to a
housewarming party. Yeah, you bring it as a gift. And science backs this up as a solid plan.
So let's move on to our next intersection of science and wine, or more accurately, medicine and wine in this case.
We have a flight of two wines here to present to everyone. And the first one is, I don't want to spoil anything, so I guess I'll kind of set it up with the story, right?
Yeah.
Where are we?
So 2007, we're in Spain, mm-hmm. right? And what starts happening is there are wine drinkers and they're winding up in the hospital and they're having severe allergic reactions. In fact, I think one of the five people that shows up at the hospital is anaphylactic. So this person is going to die from constricted airways if they don't get medical help.
Yeah. So this is not just, my face turned red because I had wine. This is, I'm in the hospital and I am in some serious pain.
Right. So the doctors conducted a couple tests and it eventually ruled out all the likely suspects. And these were all wine drinkers, we should mention.
Mm-hmm.
That's a very important detail. So the doctors conducted tests and they were trying to figure out what was what. So there are a couple likely suspects, maybe like egg white, which is sometimes given to wine to clarify it and reduce harshness. But when the doctors started scrutinizing the patient's blood, they found antibodies that suggested a recent bee or a wasp sting.
Except none of these people had been stung recently by a wasp or a bee.
All they'd been doing was chugging down wine.
Yeah. So they started investigating, and What they came up with is that everybody knows the one step in the process of winemaking. You know,
absolutely.
Even if you don't know all the chemical stuff, you know, like people with their bare feet squashing grapes, or a machine squashing grapes up. Well, what if there's something crawling on the grapes, right?
Right.
What if you have yellow jackets?
Which happen to like ripe fruit, like
mm-hmm.
grapes.
Yeah. But, you know, I think everybody knows these guys from picnics. They love picnics, and apparently they love grapes. So what was happening is yellow jackets were getting smashed up with the grapes,
and you
were getting wasp venom in the wine.
Okay.
And then when these people drank it, they had an allergic reaction to that venom.
So this would probably be more of a problem in a wine that hadn't been allowed to age then, right?
Yeah, they found that older wines were safe. Because even if there's venom in there, the venom will have had time to just degrade and lose its potency.
Mm-hmm.
And they said you probably would be good with even just a couple of weeks of aging.
So something like a Beaujolais, aren't those very new? And don't you drink them very quickly after they're produced?
I think I've heard that, yeah. So yeah, that would, if you had a wine that was really fresh, like made yesterday, this would not be a wine to drink if you had, you know, some sort of like severe allergic reaction to, say, wasp stings.
This is really interesting. My mother-in-law actually has an allergy to bee stings.
Oh, wow.
She always forgets to carry her EpiPen around with her. It makes me a little nervous. So I guess that means that we can only drink the really good stuff with her. The really good old stuff with her.
Yeah, 2009. Good stuff. So our next wine in our little flight of wines for this tasting is a Chinese super wine.
Oh, most excellent. What does it do for you?
Well, here's the deal. All right. So everybody's read, like we were talking about earlier, these articles about, hey, red wine is good for you. All these studies, you know, red wine is good for you because of this. It'll, you know, it'll keep you younger. It'll make you live longer. It'll fight cancer or heart disease or, you know, you name it.
Well, a lot of it boils down to the antioxidants, right?
Right.
So the antioxidants in red wines are called polyphenols. And the idea is that they're thought to protect the lining of blood vessels in your heart, according to the Mayo Clinic. And then there are these two main types of antioxidants. So the flavonoids, like Flav-a-Flav, and non-flavonoids. And there's one non-flavonoid that you guys have heard a lot about, I'm betting, called resveratrol.
Yeah, you can buy it in supplement form, right?
You can, although you can't internationally. I think you can buy it in the States. I don't know if the FDA has regulated it yet or what.
Yeah, some of this stuff is weird. Like, you can get melatonin here just over the counter, but I think it's more control in, like, the UK.
So resveratrol is a compound found naturally in grape skins, and there have been various studies conducted on it, and some of them have found that high doses can improve muscle endurance in mice, and also that the compound keeps them slim.
Oh,
how nice,
well,
slim
good.
Mice.
And of course, again, we'll stress that the wine skins, those end up more in the process for red wine. That's why red wine is red and white wine is white.
Right. So other studies have linked resveratrol to improving longevity. And then, of course, you have the people who say it doesn't, but it improves your overall health.
Yeah, it seemed like for a while there's like a study every week. Somebody else was hitting it. And it's understandable because there's a lot of money to be made in things like staying young and living forever.
Indeed. Yeah. Immortality. So it's been quite the fad.
Yeah. To say nothing of, you know, some sort of a health reason to drink that glass of wine every evening. So.
As if you needed an excuse.
Yeah, you go, say, hey, I'm probably staying young.
So if resveratrol is really great for us, then why not make this super wine that has a lot of it in it and make a profit from it?
Yeah, exactly.
So what's going on in China? Is that what they're after?
Well, sort of. It's there's some researchers at China's Northwest Agricultural and Forestry University.
Okay.
And they've been working to produce a genetically modified grapevine.
Okay.
So what they're doing is they're throwing in a gene variant from a particular wild Chinese vine that increases resveratrol production.
Okay.
They're not doing this specifically with the idea of, hey, we will make some crazy wine that'll make people
forever.
Think they're going to live forever. No, because as it turns out, resveratrol also works as an effective antifungal agent in the plant, protecting it, you know, from fungus. So that's really what they're going after with this. But that's not what was necessarily picked up on by various media outlets, you know,
because
antifungal wine and antifungal grapes, I may not read that. But,
not as sexy.
But super Chinese wine that could make me not age, you know, that sounds great. I'll click on that.
So what about robots and wine? What's going on there?
Oh, well, on one level, you have the, I think a number of people may have seen this, and actually I did a blog entry about this like a year ago. And it's kind of old news, but the sommelier robot from Japan's NEC System Technologies.
Okay.
This is like, you know, and like all Japanese robots, it's this cute little guy that, you know, looks kind of like a little, like, pudgy dwarf or something. You know? Like, he looks like he just came right out of an anime, you know. And, but he can identify wines with an infrared scanner and give food pairing recommendations. He can also taste leftovers and tell you what they are. And
Wait, can we just stop right there?
Yeah.
Why is he tasting leftovers? Why don't you know what the leftovers are in your fridge? I mean, do you need a robot to tell you what your leftovers are in your fridge?
Well, do we need...
Are they so unrecognizable? And if they're so unrecognizable in your fridge, then perhaps you should just throw them away.
Well, if you start asking, do we need a robot to do this, that, or the other, then, I mean, you're going to end up... I mean, that crosses out most of the robotic stuff that's going on in Japan.
Well, this particular sommelier robot identified human flesh as bacon. So it seems like there are a few flaws to be worked out.
Maybe. I don't know. Maybe human flesh tastes like bacon. I think I've heard that before.
Really?
Yeah. So maybe the robot's correct.
I suppose. Well, we have another pretty cool story about wine and robots, and this one was detailed in Astrobiology magazine.
Yeah, this one's a pretty cool story. It centers around basically a couple years ago, centers around this UC Berkeley chemistry professor by the name of Richard Matthies. All right?
Okay.
And during the day, he was working on a prototype for the Mars Organic Analyzer, or MOA. And this is the most sophisticated life detection instrument ever to be sent to the Red Planet.
And will be sent, though.
Yeah, will
to
be
the
sent. It's going
to
go in 2013. So that's his day job. at night, like a lot of us, he likes to come home, you know.
Maybe sit on his porch.
Yeah, have a little dinner, have a little red wine, and then go to sleep. And then wake up at like 3:30 a.m., like hot, flustered, with a racing heart, and, you know, has to get out of bed and somehow calm himself back down.
Was Richard going through menopause? What was going on?
but what was happening was something called tyramine. Okay.
Oh, tyramine, the modified amino acid that sets off a chemical reaction that causes the body to produce adrenaline, you mean?
That would be it. And it's common in a lot of foods that are made with bacterial fermentation.
So your pungent cheeses.
Yeah, wines, aged meats, you know, all the good stuff.
Gotcha.
Yeah. So, you know, he was a little bummed out about this.
So Professor Matthews had this idea. He wanted to know what produces it. And then, wham, he realized, well, what do you know? He can marry his nighttime wine drinking with his daytime job, because he spent a decade of his life, in fact, building a machine that can analyze organic compounds.
Yeah, the most advanced one on the planet, you know?
Yeah. So that's pretty sweet to have that at your disposal.
Yeah. So what he did is he got in touch with a local wine cellar, and they started running wines through this device. And the original article, which you can look up, it's online, and we'll probably link to it on the blogs when we
sure will.
Yeah. There's a real detailed description of how this device works, and it's really detailed. So we'll just trust
the highlights.
Yeah, trust us, it works. It involves lasers and like tagging the molecules and then analyzing them, and it's far more advanced than anything that like the Viking rovers had on Mars in the past.
Okay.
But anyway, so he goes to the winery, they start running wine through it, and not just the finished product, but like wine from every step of the fermentation process.
Okay.
To figure out, you know, when the tyramine is coming into play. And they ended up keying in on the secondary fermentation process, also known as the malolactic formation, where malic acid converts into lactic acid. And this is like malic is typically in the fruits, and it can be a bit bitter, so lactic acid softens the taste.
Okay.
All right. So this is the process that fills the wine with not only tyramines, but also histamines, which cause allergic reactions.
Right, antihistamines, sure.
Yeah. The research is still continuing, and they're looking at like which wines are more likely to contain tyramine, and which wineries are more likely to produce it. But there's actually a really even more incredible possible future for this technology.
Right, you could see it being deployed on a much grander scale. I mean, there are so many food allergies, and we're so hyper aware of what we're eating these days. And peanuts have made the headlines numerous times. You could see a parent wielding, you know, a handheld device like this and analyzing, you know, a sample of that airplane food to see if it had peanuts in it or whatever your allergy was.
Yeah, Matthews even predicts that this technology could be incorporated into like other food related gadgets. Like it could be part of a food processor. Or something even like in refrigeration, where you wouldn't have to look in your refrigerator and be like, I wonder if the tuna fish is going to kill me today, because the refrigerator will tell you, hey, dude, don't eat that tuna fish because it will kill you. You know, that kind of thing. So it's pretty amazing.
Yeah, it would totally be your call if you disobeyed the device, which I would be likely to do. I hate to see food go to waste.
Oh, I thought you hate to be bossed around by refrigerators.
Well, that too.
Yeah.
Close the door. I don't want to close the door.
So there you have it. There's some science and wine. So if you're of legal age, and in the next time you partake of a fine vintage,
we hope you'll think of us.
Yeah, think
stuff
of some of that.
Stuff in the science lab.
So hey, we got a little reader mail, by the way.
Oh, why don't you read it?
We recently heard from Chantal from Australia, and she had a couple of things to correct us on. First, in the Venom podcast, we were talking about a gusset, it turns out this is a part of the pantyhose, and it's not a specifically an Australian thing.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Good to know.
Good to know on that part. Also, she wanted to clarify, we were kind of having a little fun with Australia and its many venomous things, and talking about people having to wear pantyhose everywhere to keep from being killed by horrible, horrible lives.
She set us straight on the difference between pantyhose and stockings, which I was not aware of. I think I used the terms interchangeably until now, but now I will not.
Yeah, I was not aware either. But she also points out, and should I do an Australian accent?
No, I think no. On the Australian accent.
She says, by the way, we don't live in caves. We all have electricity, and none of us ride kangaroos to work each day. Good to know. The spider and venomous creatures are only found out in the wild and on National Geographic shows. Our cities and towns are much the same as those in the USA, just with less junk food outlets. Good to know.
Yeah. I still want to visit, badly.
Yeah, I'd like to get down there.
So if you want to tell us what's on your mind, whether it's about Australia, wine, or anything else, send us an email at sciencestuff@howstuffworks.com.
Yeah, and check out the blogs. We have a lot of cool blog entries. In fact, we have one that I did recently about like what is the coldest wine can get and where's the coldest place in the universe you could possibly drink it.
Sounds good.
Yeah, it's pretty fun.
Might have to read it over a glass of wine.
Yeah. Oh, and we have a Twitter and a Facebook.
We do.
Yeah. So check that out. We're Lab Stuff on Twitter, and you can also just do a search for Lab Stuff on Facebook
Google.
As well. Or Google, yeah.
All right, that's all we have. Thanks for listening, guys.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit HowStuffWorks.com. Want more How Stuff Works? Check out our blogs on the HowStuffWorks.com homepage.
Today's episode is brought to you by Visible. The future of wireless is here, and it's transparent. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees, no surprises, no, really.
What are you waiting for? Get with the times and switch to Visible at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
Xumo Play is your destination for endless entertainment. With a diverse lineup of 350-plus live channels, movies, and full TV series, you'll easily find something to watch right away. And the best part? It's all free. Love music? Get lost in the 90s with iHeart 90s, dance away with hip-hop beats, and more on the iHeart Radio music channels. No logins, no signups, no accounts, no hassle. So what are you waiting for? Start streaming at play.xumo.com or download from the app and Google Play stores today. All you can stream with Xumo Play.
Xfinity has free premium networks for everyone this month, no matter what kind of entertainment you love. Addicted to true crime? Catch killer cases and more spine-tingling shows on A&E Crime Central. Crave adventure? Explore Asian action movies on Hayah. Searching for something extreme? Check out skating, snowboarding, and more on Fuel TV Plus, the global home of action sports. And find crowd-pleasing bops on iHeartRadio's Hit Nation playlist. There's new free shows and movies to love every week. Say free this week in your Xfinity voice remote.